Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the 4SC conference call on today, the 8th of June, 2011. Throughout today's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulty hearing the presentation, please press the star followed by the zero on your telephone for operator assistance. I'll now hand the conference over to Ms. Yvonne Alexander. Please go ahead, madam.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to the 4SC conference call on the phase IIb component trial results in rheumatoid arthritis. I'm Yvonne Alexander, Manager of Investor and Public Relations. I'm joined today by Ulrich Dauer, CEO, Bernd Hensch, CDO, and Daniel Witt, CSO. Before we commence our call, I would like to highlight the following statements. This conference call may contain projections or estimates relating to plans and objectives relating to our future operations, products, or services, future financial results, or assumptions underlying or relating to any such statements, each of which constitutes a forward-looking statement subject to risks and uncertainties, many of which are beyond our control. Actual results could differ materially depending on a number of factors. The presented data of 4SC's randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled phase IIb component study with vidofludimus in rheumatoid arthritis are top-line clinical results after unblinding and subject to final review and evaluation. I will now pass the call to Ulrich Dauer.
Thank you, Yvonne, and welcome everybody to our vidofludimus component top-line data conference call. As you have seen this morning in our press release, we announced top-line data from our component phase IIb trial in rheumatoid arthritis. This trial compared vidofludimus, our oral inhibitor of DHODH and pro-inflammatory cytokines such as IL-17A and IL-17F in rheumatoid arthritis patients on methotrexate background versus methotrexate monotherapy over a treatment period of 13 weeks. The full analysis set included 236 patients and serves as primary basis for the efficacy data analysis. Also, ACR20 response improvement of the 35 mg vidofludimus group compared to placebo was statistically significant at week two with 16.7% versus 6.9%, and at week eight with 46.7% versus 31.9%. Vidofludimus missed the primary endpoint of significantly improving ACR20 response at week 13 with 50% versus 44.8%. The vidofludimus group also reported higher ACR50 and ACR70 responses consistently over time and at week 13. Moreover, time to ACR20 response was significantly shorter in the vidofludimus group compared to placebo. We've seen a very favorable safety profile of the compound with no apparent differences in the adverse event rate and profile between the control and vidofludimus group. Only one serious adverse event occurred in the vidofludimus group, but this was not judged as being related to vidofludimus. No deaths occurred, and we didn't observe relevant increases of diarrhea, neutropenia, anemia, hypertension, cholesterol, or liver enzyme elevation, and therefore, the safety data is consistent with our phase IIa entrance data in inflammatory bowel disease on which we reported in the first quarter. Although this data is preliminary, since still a number of secondary endpoints have not been analyzed yet, it is obvious that vidofludimus missed the primary efficacy endpoint. However, we have shown efficacy for vidofludimus in rheumatoid arthritis with statistically significant ACR20 responses at week two and week eight, as well as time to ACR20 response, which confirms the anti-inflammatory potential of vidofludimus. Moreover, we obtained a very favorable safety profile. We will continue to thoroughly analyze the current data set and data which will become available in the weeks ahead. We will also add the additional safety set to the overall data package, which is in discussions with several potential partners currently. In line with our prior stated strategy, 4SC has no intentions to conduct any further development of vidofludimus in rheumatoid arthritis beyond the component study without a partner. As As long as this is ongoing, we will focus our activities on the preparation of the next IVD development steps for vidofludimus, which includes the discussion of proposed study protocols with regulatory authorities in Europe and the FDA in the US in the coming weeks. To this end, first meetings have already been set up. We are convinced that the very compelling IVD efficacy data from our exploratory entrance trial, which delivered an 88.5% response rate in combination with a confirmed favorable safety profile of vidofludimus, form a good base for the positioning of vidofludimus in this medically underserved market. This market is forecasted to be $2.9 million across the seven major markets by 2019 and about $4 billion worldwide by 2016. There's a high unmet need for oral, safe and steroid-sparing non-biologic drugs with the potential to induce and maintain remission. Current treatment options are limited because root causes are either not attacked or long-term systemic side effects, as with steroids, or loss of efficacy, as with biologicals, occur frequently. At the moment, only a few antibodies are approved, with current rare competition from small molecules, as many do not display the right profile for which the market demands. This market could offer peak sales in excess of $1 billion worldwide. I would like to use this opportunity to thank our 4SC team members who have been working extremely hard on the development of vidofludimus, and we are convinced that this innovative compound creates multiple options to contribute to the further growth of 4SC. Now with that, the call is open for your questions. Operator?
Thank you, sir. If any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. To cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received, and there will be a short pause whilst participants register for a question. Thank you. And the first question comes from Edward Aubrey from Equinet. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, three questions, if I may. So the first question, at week eight, you were showing quite significant delta to placebo. Could you maybe, do you have any explanation why this delta dropped to only 5% at week 12? Second question will be, will you consider any further investment in vidofludimus development in any inflammatory, should it be lupus, psoriasis, or IBD, without a partnership? And the last one, I was wondering if you could tell us where or far are you, let's say, in the design of the phase 2B in IBD, and if you could give us any time frame on when you think that this study could be initiated. Thank you.
Edouard, this is Uli Dauer. Thank you for your questions, and I try to answer the two latter ones and leave the first one to Bernd, because I think those questions are somehow linked to each other. First of all, we see still the potential of vidofludimus in IBD, and this is even underlined by an additional safety set which we now have available with this component trial. And what we are currently doing on our side, as stated, is to schedule meetings with authorities here in Europe as well as the FDA in the US to present our development plan and to get their feedback. Of course, it is high on our priority to get a partner on board for the development of further IBD trials. And this somehow has already answered probably your question how far we are. So we have an idea about a development plan. We have built a kind of virtual network in IBD with key opinion leaders, with regulatory consultants. And again, the next step is going to be to present the planned development plan to the authorities and obviously get their feedback, and at the same time we will continue our partnering discussions. That's the two questions, and for the first one, I hand it over to Bernd.
Yes, certainly, I would like to cover that. So, yes, it's right, and as Uli stated also, and the press release says, at week 8, the data were still significant difference between the placebo and the Verum arm, and at week 13, at the end of the trial, they weren't anymore. The question certainly is why the placebo rate went up that high, and this is certainly one of the insights that we would like to receive from looking and digging into the data deeper. It is actually what has been described also for other drugs in development currently, and here I might quote the Novartis antibody recently presented with data from phase 2 developments, and also they saw an increase in the placebo arm towards the end of the trial, which again also in their hands led to non-significant data at the primary endpoint. So it has been seen, this type of phenomenon has been seen in trials, so that placebo rates of up to 50 and sometimes even more than 50% were seen. However, why between week 8 and week 13 in our trial the placebo rate goes up, we need to investigate in detail once the full data set is being analyzed and available to us, which will happen over the next few weeks.
Okay, thank you very much. Maybe a follow-up on the first question, if I may. So it is something that we could expect to see an initiation of phase 2B in IBD this year?
Well, again, I mean, first of all, we need to understand our position relative to the feedback of the authorities. That's the first thing we have to wait. And then, again, it's high on our agenda to get a partner on board for further development activities in IBD.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Sachin Soni. Please go ahead with your question.
Good afternoon, everyone. I was thinking, so you are planning to partner vidofludimus in IBD and at the same time designing the new trial in IBD itself. So how does it go? Are you already anticipating kind of a design which partner would like? Are you doing that independent of whether it is partnered or not?
Sachin, this is Uli. I mean, first of all, we also wanted to understand the feedback of parties which whom we are in discussions concerning RA. I think that's also an interesting feedback for us to see what their reaction on the data set is. And secondly, yes, I mean, we are in discussions with potential partners with a focus on IBD development, and you can assume that the trial design which we are proposing is certainly considering feedback from various parties involved here.
Okay, and to follow up on this, so what is the expected timeline for this kind of partner or start of this trial?
You know, it's always difficult for me to set expectations to processes where we are only part, 50% part of. It's high on our priority. We would like to have a partner sooner than later on board, but it's hard for me to make more specific projections on the timeline.
Maybe one comment from my side, Bernd speaking. Again, we are talking to regulatory authorities on both sides of the ocean, so to the FDA as well as to European regulatory authorities. And what we would like to do is to harmonize the setup of that trial so that we can run it on both sides of the ocean. And again, that is subject that we need those meetings in the first place and then see that we can start up the trial after all the comments are being available.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Robin Davison. Please go ahead with the question.
Oh, yes, hello there. Hello. Good afternoon. First of all, I wondered, when you look at the data that you have from the component study and also the earlier rheumatoid arthritis study, I wonder, Is it possible to draw the conclusion that the 35 milligram dose might have been insufficient in this instance? And does that have implications for development in IBD and or other autoimmune indications?
Yeah, this is Bernd speaking again. Obviously, that is being investigated as we have insights into all the data available. Having seen now a very clean side effect profile, we now need also to see all individual lab data, so objective data from lab analysis, so that we can clearly find out whether, for example, inflammatory markers are being downregulated, what is happening, for example, with biomarkers like IL-17, are they being regulated in a fashion that can be believed to be in a therapeutic range. And once all these data are being summarized, being analyzed, we might then be able to judge whether the 35 milligram dose for RA is a sufficient dose or might not be a sufficient dose. And that, as you can imagine, might then also have an impact on the design of the IBD setup, but that has to be analyzed in detail as we go along with the data analysis.
Okay. Do you know at this point whether there was, good compliance with the protocol for both the placebo, well, the methotrexate alone and the combination arms?
The answer is yes, there was a high compliance.
Okay. I know it seems academic, but with the ACR 50 and 70 rates at 13 weeks, are they? They're not significant. So there's just a trend at that point, numerical superiority, but not statistically significant. Is that correct?
They were not significant between verum and placebo. That is right. The study certainly has been powered to achieve significance for SCR 20. It was not powered for SCR 50 or 70, so we didn't reach significance for SCR 50 and 70. That's right, yes.
Right, okay. And just one last one, perhaps, which is I probably directed to Uli. You talked about the partners on this call in the past. I mean, do any of the partners that you're currently talking to, are any of them specifically interested in the IBD indication and, you know, weren't really considering RA in any case? Are they, so therefore they're prime candidates for you, if you like.
So the universe of potential partners we have been talking to really ranged from partners who were mainly interested in the rheumatoid arthritis market to partners who were specifically interested in the IBD market. Now, the difficulty prior to the trial data was that we are not able to do an indication split with a drug which is given in two indications with the same application route, once daily oral dosing, 35 milligram. Now we have a clearer picture, another picture we would like to have seen, but now the situation seems to be clearer, and we will continue our discussions with those who are specifically interested in the IBD market.
Right. So there were some companies, obviously more than one, that are specifically interested in IBD.
Can you repeat, please, Arne?
Yeah, sorry. There are more than one company that is specifically interested in IBD as a potential partner.
Can confirm that there's definitely one than more company who is interested in the IBD market.
Right. Good. Okay, thank you very much for those answers.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Samir Devani. Please go ahead with your question.
Afternoon, everyone. Afternoon, Uli. Just a really quick question about the SAE that was observed. Could you just give us some more details about what that SAE was?
Okay, you're referring to the SAE. Bernd, would you comment on this question?
This was an SAE which was judged to be related to a concomitant disease, and the concomitant disease basically was a very strong cold or flu that the patient had. So the patient stayed at home, dehydrated over a number of days due to the cold he had, and then had to go to the doctor and was hospitalized, and based on that, it had to be judged as an SAE for that patient, unrelated or not likely to be related to vidofludimus.
Okay, thanks very much.
Once again, if any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. To cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. Thank you. And the next question comes from Mick Cooper. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi. I was just wondering if you could give us some indication of how long it would take to give to do the additional analysis and when there might be some additional data from the trial.
Yes, of course. I mean, data coming in now in the next few weeks and need analysis over the next few weeks. So certainly what we intend to do once the data package is available and the data are analyzed and the secondary endpoints are being fully available, we're going to present that at an upcoming scientific meeting in detail, either in a poster presentation or in an oral presentation as we go along. So it will take a little while, but again, we will then present the full data set to the scientific community on an upcoming meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Thomas Schiessel. Please go ahead with your question.
Thomas Hiesler here. Hello, gentlemen. A question on the trial design and the proposed hurdle rate of 30% placebo rate. Will it be prudent in the future to take this hurdle rate again, the 30%, or will you be move the hurdle rate up to 40% or even 50% as indicated in the long-term effects in the current study.
Mr. Schiessler, this is Uli Dauer. Thank you for your question. I mean, we certainly don't want to end up in a kind of philosophical discussion here and justify the outcome of the trial with only high placebo. I mean, it's the nature of the trial that the drug can only be judged as efficacious if there's a certain difference between a control arm, a placebo arm, and a serum arm. And that was the expectation we had when we designed the trial. And unfortunately, at week 13, we didn't achieve the primary endpoint. And obviously, what is being shown is with reference to the primary endpoint, the drug obviously was not efficacious enough. That's our conclusion.
Okay, fair enough.
Thank you. And we have a follow-up question from Robin Davison. Please go ahead with your question.
Oh, sorry, exactly. Follow-up. I just wondered for the potential avenues of development in lupus and psoriasis. If you were to partner it, how soon could a partner take those forward? I mean, do they require additional work, or could hypothetically, based on the patient exposure, that there is, you know, the exposure to elements could move quite fast?
Yeah, thank you, Robin. I mean, in our mind, in our perception, this is a package. So vidofludimus does have certain data associated to it, clinical data in IBD and in RA, and preclinical data in other autoimmune diseases such as lupus, which we presented at the EULAR recently, such as psoriasis and transplant rejection. You know, as a small company, we don't have the capacity to pursue all those indications from a clinical perspective. So we are offering a package, and as to, you know, what kind of specific clinical trials a partner wants to embark on, you know, that's too premature. What we can say is we have compelling preclinical data available over a variety of autoimmune diseases. We have compelling clinical data available in IBD, and this is what we offer. And so we have to see what the perception of potential partners is with respect to further autoimmune indications on top of IBD.
Okay, thank you.
And as a final reminder, if any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. We do not appear to have any further questions. Please continue with any points you wish to raise.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks, everybody, for your continued interest in our company. We wished we could have presented to you a better result than we did today. But still, we remain very optimistic about the future development of vidofludimus, especially in IBD, and especially we remain optimistic of the future development of 4SC. So we do have a pipeline. We do not only have one compound, and in the second half of this year, we are expecting the final outcome of two more phase 2 trials in oncology with resminostat. This applies for Hodgkin's lymphoma and for hepatocellular carcinoma. And as you may recall, we have already presented interim data for those indications, which also led to a first local partnership in Japan. And we certainly want to continue our partnering strategy and to extend it to rest of world territories for this compound. Again, thank you, and we look forward to continue our discussion with you on the next occasion. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.